For our last segment with Sarah Lacey, we look backwards at a harrowing experience she had with some Uber executives and a look at the present day state of the still pervasive bro economy. Thanks for sticking around. This is Techonomics, and I'm Jason Middleton. Having a sit down with Sarah Lacey, she's the CEO of PandoDaily.com, amongst other things. She has a new book coming out soon, too, so we'll keep an eye on that. Now, history-wise, when you said you pivoted to more adversarial kind of journalism when you after your tech crunch, give us a little background so that we can have the context for what happened with Uber, and then let's get an update on that situation.
I don't think my journalism changed as much as the world around me changed.
Fair enough.
I've always done the same level of journalism. I think I came from publications like Business Week that always took a very hard lens on this stuff, where, you know, we took the fact that people would invest in companies based on what we wrote about them really seriously. And we took being right really seriously. And, you know, then went to a place like TechCrunch, which, yes, did sort of repurpose a lot of press releases, but also was really hard on companies. I mean, most companies felt like in that era they were really treated unfairly by TechCrunch. So I think TechCrunch, it's hard to think now because now it's become such a press release factory. But, like, before it was owned by AOL, was a very adversarial publication.
Yes.
And so, and I think fast forwarding to now, we've gotten into a place where all of these publications have been sold or closed. So they're not being run by this original sort of scrappy group of adversarial reporters who didn't have any problem like calling people out. And so you have something like, you know, AOL running these platforms, or you have something like what we've seen with Recode, where so much of their business model became dependent on events that they basically had to do access-based journalism.
Right. Well, some of that journalism you were doing apparently set somebody off an Uber at a cocktail party in New York. So tell us a little bit about that, just so we have the context. And hopefully everything's been cool since then. Or
we've been writing about Uber for about 18 months before this, and you know, really on the forefront of a lot of like the dark sides of this company, and writing things before anyone else was. And we really did change a lot of the conversation around them, both with background checks and a lot of deep misogyny that runs throughout this company on a lot of different levels.
Wow.
And it hit a point where I felt like, as a woman, I could no longer use this app. And I should mention, we have about half a dozen shared investors with Uber. I was friends with both Travis Kalanick and Garrett Camp. I mean, I knew these people very well. This is not like I'm like some unknown blogger who's just looking at this company and surmising things about it. I mean, I was very, very close to this company. But I made a decision that as a woman, there was no way I could support this service anymore. And, you know, it's a deeper conversation to all the reasons why. We've written about it a lot. So I deleted the app, and I wrote an article explaining why I deleted it. And look, it definitely got picked up a lot of places. I got a lot of emails, a lot of tweets from other women saying that they were deleting it. Like, I still run into women who tell me that. But, like, we're a pretty small publication. I mean, we're not, like, BuzzFeed, for Christ's sake. So
right.
It's like one of our pieces getting very, very widely read can really only do so much to hurt a company like Uber. But where we do hurt a company like Uber is the people who read us are, you know, all of the most influential or important people in the tech world, and increasingly in areas like media and entertainment as well, because we write about those intersections a lot. So I feel like when we write something negative on Uber, probably a smaller percentage of their riders or drivers read it versus, say, the New York Times. It's all of the people who are around the CEOs and the VCs all day long.
Right.
It's their peer group. So I think sometimes it feels bigger than it is. But for whatever reason, they just thought we had to be stopped. And they tried lots of different avenues to silence our reporting before, the normal things. And frankly, I mean, to our investors' credit, no one ever called us and said, you should stop writing these things. Like, it was really just the company itself. But that article led to a dinner that was hosted by Michael Wolff and this guy Ian Osborne, who's the point of this dinner was one of the handful of times they have tried to rehab Travis Kalanick's image as being this nice guy. And that's the irony of it. The entire point of the off-the-record dinner with Arianna Huffington, Michael Wolff, Ben Smith from BuzzFeed, all of these great reporters, was to make Travis Kalanick not look like a monster. Meanwhile, at the other end of the table, Emil Michael, who is one of Travis's quote-unquote bros, and a senior executive of the company who I've never met, went on this sort of crazy rant to Ben Smith from BuzzFeed. And Ben Smith had been invited last minute, and no one had told him the dinner was off the record. But basically, Emile Michael went on this crazy rant and said, you know, there's all these journalists, and you know, detailed this plan to destroy journalists, quote, by going after their families in ways that would never be traced back to Uber. The top of the list of who they felt they needed to do it. But, you know, you see this over and over again. You see this with what Tinder tried to do to Nancy Jo Sales after the Vanity Fair article. You see this with what the Koch brothers tried to do to the New Yorker reporter. I mean, you see this over and over and over again. And it's always female journalists. And it's always, how do I destroy their personal lives? And it's, I mean, he had like a multi-million dollar like plan sketched out of who to hire and how to do this. And, you know, I was obviously horrified when I heard this. You kind of have two choices in that situation. And your choice is either to just say, you know, I'm going to do my thing. People will respect my work or they won't. And I think that's usually where I am when it comes to these scandals and internet fights. I try not to really engage.
Mm-hmm.
But this was something very different because it was a threat against my family.
Right.
And, like, I mean, if you go into nature, if you threaten mother's children,
like
that's just not what you do if you want like a moderate reaction.
right
And like I think I felt the same way, and I just felt like, look, like they're gonna try to destroy my company and try to destroy my family and try to destroy me and everything I've spent decades working for and building. My other option, other than just hoping it doesn't happen or hoping people take the high road, it was to be so loud about it.
Yes.
And so deeply expose what they did that if any of their plans ever did come out, the pink finger would obviously be pointed back at them. And not only that, but like there's a lot of women who either don't have the platform that I do to be as loud about this, or don't have the freedom to do what I did because they don't own their own companies.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of like and thing is, Uber, I was sort of subject A of what they wanted to do, but there were a lot of reporters they wanted to go after. That week was, I mean, I laugh about it now when it's brought up, but like there was nothing funny about that couple weeks. And I mean, look, when you were on every newspaper and you were on every news show and the most valuable company, which has an army of drivers who may or may not be background check, who all know where I live because I used to be a customer, is sending out a message that I'm the enemy of this company. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out like why that turns into a very real physical threat.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I had to have armed guards for several weeks. That was incredibly scary for my children. It wasn't fun. It was a horrible experience.
Yeah.
It was a really horrible experience.
Well, I hate to bring it up again, but I think it's important to give it another pass. And plus, I have you here in the studio with me. So, Sarah, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. Thank you for all your time and all your good reporting.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Lacey, founder and CEO of PandoDaily.com. You can also follow her on Twitter. Her handle is Sarah Cuda. Coming up after the break, a look at this week in Elon Musk, and it's a doozy to the tune of almost $3 billion. Come back for one more time. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.